Welcome back, everybody. It's CFP Winning Edge, the podcast edition. I'm your host, Scott Bogman. Follow me on the Twitter at Bogman Sports. You can follow Nicholas Ian Allen, the man, the myth, the legend. He makes it all happen here at CFP Winning Edge, at CFP Winning Edge on the Twitter. And Father of the Year, Xavier Triche, at Xavier underscore Triche, T-R-I-C-H-E. And today, you know, look, we're hitting some spring games, you know, some spring practices, more to be put a point on it there. Yeah, there's a little transfer news, interesting transfer news, a little bit of coaching news as well. And then, yeah, spring practice, spring games. There is still stuff happening, even though it seems like we are hitting a little bit of a lull. It's like pro days, you know, spring practices. It's less intense than it will be this time next month. So, what do you think, Nick? Are you, I know you have no shortage of information you're combing through.
Yeah, I completely disagree. I know you guys have more, you know, pressing obligations.
Baseball.
With opening day coming up soon. So I totally understand that college football is much more top of mind for me than it is for you guys today and you know, here on March 20th. But I mean, there's so much happening, and
yeah.
I mean, it's so maybe it's not. I don't know. I don't know exactly how to describe it, because on the one hand, I was going to say, you know, maybe it's not just the quantity, maybe it is the quality. But I mean, the big coaching news is a running backs coach. How much does that really matter in the grand scheme of things? I think it's super interesting, and I really
I think so too.
Xavier's opinion specifically on it, because he's played football a lot more recently than we have in a higher level, for sure, on what really impact there is there. But and then, you know, some other stuff, we're starting to get a little bit more buzz as far as transfers, and a couple of them or some of it being maybe a player is headed back to a former school unexpectedly. But transfer news is going to be picking up after it was starting to slow down for a bit the last few weeks, but that
Rico's
spring window is going
now.
To be open. Yeah. So maybe it's, you know, it's not huge quantity necessarily, except that just about everybody in college football has started spring practice now. And it's not like it's the biggest news, because, you know, it's an offensive lineman transferring, maybe not a household name for everybody, though one of the top recruits in the country and a starter as a freshman last year. But I don't know. It just seems like there are some things that really make you kind of raise an eyebrow when you see it. So it just always seems like something's going on.
Yeah. Well, something always is going on, but it's less news, I guess, but this is important stuff. I mean, the first one here is, Miami head coach Mario Cristobal confirmed to reporters this week that leading rusher Henry Parrish Jr. plans to enter the transfer portal. And I think the rumor is him going back to Ole Miss, which seems like an option now that Judkins has gone to Ohio State. So I think it makes sense. It sounds like the right fit. Is that what we're thinking here, Nick?
That seems to be all the early buzz. And I, you know, saw some speculation. I don't know if it was actual reporting, but that perhaps Lane Kiffin was involved in maybe a little preemptive discussion. So who knows? But, you know.
Scandalous, maybe.
Lost one of the top running backs in college football, and Parrish kind of lost his handle on that starting job toward the end of last year with Mark Fletcher's emergence. So perhaps after a few days in Miami opening spring practice, Parrish was looking around, even though Fletcher, I think, is limited due to injury. Might have said, you know, maybe there's a bigger role for me back at Ole Miss potentially. So not a done deal, but it sounds like that might be where he ends up.
Yeah. Xavier, your thoughts on Parrish moving?
Yeah, I mean, that's the second – I think that's one of, if not the second biggest, you know, skill guy that they've lost. And this is not a team – you know, this is a team that really, with the addition of Cam Ward, really felt comfortable. with the idea that he was going to have an array of skill sets around him, you know, to work off of, especially in the run game, right? We understand how good of an athlete he is, and how, you know, deadly of a runner he has been throughout his career. And so it was going to be, it's really interesting to see them lose a guy really, you know, not necessarily before spring, but it kind of in the midst of it. Maybe he just kind of understands that he doesn't have the lockdown spot that he originally had, and he's getting to it early, right? You know, we mentioned it maybe a couple of podcasts ago that the mass exodus after spring practice is going to hit. So this is a kid maybe jumping the gun and getting his name out there early so he can find a new landing spot. Maybe he finds a new landing spot before their spring practice even finishes, and he's able to really get in there and get, you know, some important reps, which is a smart idea from him. So I think it's good for Miami standpoint. It's never good to lose another talented individual. You can never have too much depth, especially at the running back position. As we well know, running backs can get hurt, you know, pretty frequently. And to have just an excellent running back room, as we've watched the teams like Wisconsin, Ohio State in previous years, Georgia in previous years, having a really good running back room is just, you know, a really nice luxury to have. But I think Henry Parrish will end up somewhere, you know, heck, we'll take him at Georgia. Come on down.
Yeah.
Henry Parrish and Trevor Etienne, fire it up. But no, I don't necessarily have a good feel of where he'll go. Now he may end up at Ohio State. He may end up at another major P5. A talent like that might end up.
You don't like the Ole Miss idea?
I mean, he enrolled there. He was there. I mean, he was there. He enrolled in 2020. He may go back. They could use his talents for sure. But he gives me the feeling, especially doing it at the time that he's doing it, he's going to take his time with this, understanding that he didn't done that at the beginning of spring practice, understanding that he'll have the opportunity to probably pick from the litter, because once again, he's done it before the mass exodus that will happen. Ole Miss is definitely up there. I could see him being in the SEC. If I'm him, you know, Missouri might be on the cards. You know, there's a lot of teams, I think, that would want his services ASAP. But it'll be interesting to see where he goes, because he's an extremely talented kid, and I want to see him land on his feet for sure.
My read on it was, you know, things have gotten a little bit crowded at Miami. Yeah. So I not sure that he would necessarily be super interested in another
crowded
place where he has to go in, and there are, you know, two or three other guys that he's having to compete with for those main carries. Ole Miss, to me specifically, makes sense. Right now, Ulysses Bentley is the presumptive starter, the guy who was number two to Quinshon Judkins last year. Logan Diggs transferred in from LSU, but I believe, I don't know if this is like out there and like super well known maybe, but there's plenty of buzz kind of behind the scenes about it that Diggs, I think, suffered a significant knee injury late in the year and is going to be limited this fall, perhaps. So Ole Miss, I think specifically, you know, he has the history there, but he you know, potentially, I think, could come in and have the biggest impact. You know, would expect if he's able to come in the summer, get up to speed and kind of, you know, slot in there as at least a 1A, 1B situation where, you know, Ohio State, how many carries is he really going to get with Judkins and Henderson and so.
So I don't know. With these situations, I always like to look at where the kid visited before he ultimately committed, just to see what the connection is. He visited with South Carolina, Pittsburgh, and FAU, as well as Ole Miss during his high school recruiting. Obviously, that doesn't necessarily mean those are going to be the four teams on his short list, but it does give me some type of insight on maybe where he may decide to go, depending on who's still there, who was he recruited by. Heck, he might go to Florida. Florida sent not one but two guys to recruit after him and were really hot on his trail at the end of his recruiting as well. So there's definitely you know, to kind of bring that point, he was at Ole Miss. He was recruited heavily by Miami, who also sent two recruiters, which is obviously where he then transferred to. So he obviously knows that there's some love there at UF for his services. So
interesting. Yeah, and also Caden Proctor, who had transferred from Alabama to Iowa, seems like he might be going back. to Alabama, I did see the meme that said he just wanted to go watch Caitlin Clark play basketball, which is pretty funny. But Nick, what happened here? Is this just like a change of heart for the old lineman, or do you think he got in there, saw the situation, and bailed? I mean, that's, it could be fairly damning to Iowa. I just don't know really how to read it.
Yeah, it's a bit of a surprise. Proctor was committed to Iowa as a five-star offensive tackle recruit a couple of years ago for a long time, and I believe flipped to Alabama on signing day, goes to Tuscaloosa, starts as a true freshman for Nick Saban, but when Saban retires, Proctor was among the very first to enter the transfer portal and ended up back at Iowa. He's from Iowa, had the connection there with the coaching staff during his recruitment. Seemed like a real natural fit. More speculation and rumors, but saw something about, and maybe this was actually a joke. I don't know if it was somebody with any real inside knowledge, but sat down a couple of install meetings, looked around at Iowa and said, you know what, no, this isn't going to work, and decided to move on. Not sure, but sounds like all signs are pointing toward him going back to Alabama. But it kind of reminds me a little bit of, I don't know how much you guys watched Parks and Rec, if at all.
Oh, yeah.
But you remember when Ben kept going to the accounting firm and they got excited.
I have to leave now.
Right.
I got an opportunity. I can't turn it down. Yep, I'm sorry.
That to me
was the shortest one yet, Ben. Oh, so funny. Great reference.
that seems like Caden Proctor and Iowa to me.
Xavier, your thoughts on Alabama and Caden Proctor in Iowa? I mean, is this bad for Iowa, or does it really not mean that much? It's just kid.
I mean, realistically, it felt weird from the jump because
it did.
He was leaving from like an NFL perspective, not necessarily because we all understand that Iowa typically puts out pretty good offensive linemen, but from a playing perspective, it was like, bro, why are you leaving? Like, you're already one of the highest rated tackles coming out in your class. There's really no reason for you to go there. It's not like you're necessarily going to change your draft stock tremendously by going out there. I just didn't fully understand it, to be honest. I'm pretty sure he, like Nick said, got to watch the offense be extremely stagnant and maybe only score 7 points in practice. And he was like, all right. Time to get back to Bama, where I know for a fact we'll score more than 7 points in an actual, 60-minute or 48-minute football game. So it's interesting. I don't know if you also saw the troll job that Ohio State fans were doing today.
No.
So some random blue check, now that we can buy them, was like, oh, yeah. And on other news, Caleb Downs is going back to Bama. Sent Bama Twitter in a tizzy. They were all excited. They were like,
Nick had it on the sheet.
Maybe my mind is mush. It's been a long week. It's been a long day. So
been a lot of weird news today.
Yeah. There has been. So I saw something about, I saw a tweet, but then I clicked on the Caleb Downs quote unquote Twitter handle and had like 500 followers. So didn't really believe that one, but then I saw a screenshot of his Instagram, which had like 158,000, and it removed Ohio State references. Apparently, I don't know. there are rumors flying. Who knows?
Rumors flying. So there but could I, be more.
At everybody that I respect on Twitter and that has credible sources to my knowledge were like, I don't know where this is coming from. The brother's not leaving. Oh, all right.
Yeah. Cool. Yep.
If you were to pop up tomorrow with I could never leave. I could never truly leave or something like that. Cool. Call me shocked. But to everybody that I know who really has a pulse in that situation and didn't just do it for clicks, was like, look, it's not happening. So
yeah, all the early, interviews and things like that at Ohio State spring camp. Seems like he's pretty, you know, pretty well entrenched there. But I did have a question. This came up a little bit in the Campus to Canton Slack, and I've been thinking about this sort of thing because even when I was coaching high school football a decade ago, it wasn't super uncommon for players to transfer within high schools. Like we had our starting quarterback 1 year transferred, 2 years actually, transferred from the crosstown like arch rival, the team you're supposed to hate that your parents hated and all that. And he came over, he was the best player on the team. And, you know, the team was like, great, this is going to, you know, we went to the state championship.
Accept you with open arms. Yeah, yeah.
Right. Exactly. And so, you know, that has become more and more common. Guys hop high schools all the time. And now obviously in college it happens. So the question came up like, okay, are Caden Proctor specifically, if he ends up back at Alabama, are his Alabama teammates happy to see him? Or are they like, hey, you left us and there's going to be some sort of bad blood. I think I'm of the opinion that everybody except the fifth best offensive lineman on the roster is very happy to see Caden Proctor back in Tuscaloosa if it happens.
Right.
Of course. Yeah. I mean, yeah, he all good. You know what? You made a mistake. Everybody makes mistakes. We accept you immediately. Yeah.
Yeah.
No issues. So,
yeah. I mean, realistically, he would have had to be just the worst human on the face of the planet for nobody to have wanted him back. Like, that's really typically how this goes. Like, it's really hard for the entire locker room to hate a guy. Now, not to say it doesn't happen, but it is extremely hard, especially in football, unlike any other sport, because there's just so many people. Like, let's just say there's 100 kids on that team. Yeah, I'm lowballing, of course, for hypotheticals. It would be really difficult for that whole 100 to just hate you as being your former teammate. There's got to be at least a small contingency of like 5 or 6 guys you go to the calf with every single day, at the very least, right? That can insulate you while you come back before you get back on the field. But, you know, as long as you help winning, typically you're pretty good with everybody.
Yeah, you don't have to be friends. You just got to be teammates.
Yeah, pretty much.
So, yeah. So if anyone's upset about it, whatever. Now, we did have a coaching news, as Nick alluded to, and it was Michigan hired former Ohio State running back coach Tony Alford to replace Mike Hart. So, you know, speaking of rivalries, very strange to see something like this happen. And then, Nick, you had a question for Xavier as well.
Yeah, I do, because so this was definitely one of those things that, you know, eye-catching, right? I mean, how often does a position coach make a lateral move in terms of title from one arch rival to the other, especially in this particular rival, right?
Yeah.
So that caught my eye first and foremost. But then the other layer to it, and I wanted to get your input on this specifically, my limited experience, you know, coaching, but also as an outside observer of football for however long, running back coaches seemingly are usually among the best recruiters on staff. They're usually among the top, you know, players' coaches. They're the ones that seem to have like the best relationship with players. A lot of times running back coaches are really young. You know, there's just a little bit easier connection perhaps. How much does a running back coach actually matter? Because beyond those things, beyond recruiting, beyond relationships with players, my assumption is the on-field impact is pretty limited. Like if you were to stack up who's going to, you know, get their position group to perform at another level or to, you know, play better football, just lack of a better term, running backs coach is pretty low on my list, but am I missing something? So what are your thoughts?
It's kind of twofold, right? Because in the position where you're right about the fact that their overall impact, especially with the way the game has changed now, isn't necessarily felt as much as like your D-line coach or a cornerbacks coach, right? Or a quarterbacks coach, obviously. but it's kind of twofold. If I bring in a talented running back, my work isn't does my work does my work kind of goes under the radar, right? If I don't bring in a talented running back, or if I miss on a couple of running backs in a row, then my work is way more important. And that typically, and that might be goal for every position, but I think a lot of other positions we kind of expect there to be like a level of growth throughout time, and then that player should get better year in, year out. And so your coaching matters more in that regard. Hell, you can even take a really athletic kid from, you know, that was maybe a 2 or 3 star, and he'll, you know, be playing better than a 5 star by the end of his time because of your growth. Typically, if you really look at the track records of a lot of running back coaches, especially at the highest level, they recruit extremely well at the running back position. And that also then hails to their ability to be consistently good running backs that come through the school, right? You look at his track record, Travion Henderson, J.K. Dobbins, right? Like, there's a consistent track record of really good players.
It's Brian Judkins.
Right. And so he gets credit for that, and he gets credit for adding the nuances to their game and making sure that those backs, because the most important thing about when you're recruiting running backs is they've got to fit into what your offense is going to do or what your offense will ask them to do. Because the one thing I will say, the number one thing that I hear from like all draft scouts when it comes to running backs now, because of the way the NFL has changed, how can they pass block? Mm-hmm. Is their ability to pass block going to be able to keep them on the field now? Mm-hmm. Because that typically is now one of the things that either keeps you on the field or puts you on the bench, right? You can be a great running back, but if you can't block on third down or you can't be a threat to either catch, run, or block on third down, I don't need you. So there is a level of nuance that obviously is there being able to help running backs develop. I just don't think it's a position that gets as much attention because at the end of the day, I drafted Derrick Henry. You watched Derrick Henry in high school.
Yeah.
Right.
Not a lot of coaching going on there. You
right.
Know.
You know, but you see, I will talent. Say that you do see, and it's really hard, but you will see kind of, in my opinion, you see how well a running back was coached in college once they get to the pros. Perfect example. I'll give you two different examples. Trent Richardson, amazing college back. Couldn't read anything when he got to the pro level. Struggled mightily, was out the league in 4 years. Right. Yeah. On the flip side of that, Kyren Williams, good running back in college, you know, got to the pros. Right. Yeah. Not elite by any means. Got to the pros.
Very good.
Has run with it as soon as he got to the pro level because his coaching in college, you don't really, like I said, you don't really see it until they get to the pro level, because at the pro level, they're being asked to do so much more, from reading blitzes to, like I said, being able to pass block, to being able to run correct routes and options and things of that nature. They're being asked to do a lot more. Where in college, come on, like, I'm going to give you 30 carries, inside zone, outside zone, different types of reads, stretches, all the way around nine. But it's not going to – you don't feel the same kind of impact that maybe we may have felt 30 years ago, where running was the most important thing and passing was still kind of behind.
I haven't been on a sideline like you guys, but, I mean, running back coach is still the guy that holds you accountable on the sideline too, right? Like, the OC will bark at you if you screw up.
Yeah.
But your attaboys usually are coming from the RB.
Well, yeah, because
– the drills and the meetings and all that stuff.
Yeah,
right?
I mean this in the best way possible. You know, and this is no shade to any of my coaches from the other position groups. But the running back coach is typically the coolest guy of the entire coach.
That's it. I mean, that's kind of the yeah. There are kind of like
underrated
archetypes, because, right?
Yeah,
that's sort of my.
And they're how do I put it? So the other piece too, and this is the funny part, they're the most average looking person of your coaching staff, typically. Like, okay, hold on.
You're gonna throw looks in there too?
No. Not like look-wise, but like height-wise, right? Like, typically running backs are extremely tall. They're not extremely big human beings, so they're extremely approachable. Similarly to a lot of DB coaches too, they're just more personable because they're 5'9", 5'10", 5'11", and everybody on the team isn't like, it's not like your linebacker.
You're not the monstrous O-line coach.
Yeah, I was going to say, usually not fat. Is that what you're going with?
I
mean, you know,
that I think right. Tall and intimidating right. Is what he's going yeah, for.
They're not sure. They're not the 13-year offensive tackle who went off and played 10
yeah.
years in the pros, who's 6'6". And when he yells at you, it's like you're being, screamed at by Thor. And then you've got my 5'10 guy over here who's like, come on, man, you got to get together. And it's like,
yeah.
I'm looking at you eye to eye. You know, it's a little bit. Yeah,
he's not the scream at you guy. He's the, what are we doing, man?
You know.
Yeah. That's funny. It's like Nick said, archetype. I like it. That was a great question, Nick. Outstanding. So a great response, Xavier. Great stuff here. Let's talk about some of the spring practices. And Nick, we just most recently saw the Missouri spring game, right? So I know that's probably freshest in your brain. What do you see in the Missouri spring game?
Yeah, I mean, the Missouri, we've discussed a little bit when we talked about way too early rankings and things like that. There's a lot of really positive buzz around Missouri this year, and they've had a little bit of a spotlight this spring because they got started earlier than most of those teams that are kind of in that bucket, especially as far as, you know, kind of the you know, outside of the usual top 10, top 15 kind of preseason sort of teams. And so one, they kind of had the stage to themselves on Saturday, ESPN Plus stream, and, you know, it's going to be replayed on SEC Network 100 times between now and the beginning of the season, I'm sure. So not anything too earth shattering. Brady Cook was picked off once, but otherwise took care of the ball pretty well, threw a 36-yard touchdown pass to offensive MVP Joshua Manning, kind of a, you know, for talking about spring breakouts. He stepped up in part because, you know, there weren't that many options for Brady Cook to throw to. Luther Burden played a couple of series and then sat out the rest of the game, understandably. Don't want to get your, you know, star player, one of the elite players in college football hurt. So get him out quickly. And then, you know, the other two top two receivers, Theo Weiss and Mookie Cooper, were on the other team. So, you know, Cook didn't have really his expected top three wideouts. And so a guy like Joshua Manning was able to come in, step up, made some big plays, got MVP honors. Will he be able to carry that over to a bigger role this season? That's unclear. We've talked in the past, you know, these spring conversations, kind of like that running back question we've had in the past, and like, what are our major takeaways and things like that. Mm-hmm. I always struggle with, all right, I want to know everything, but I also don't want to over, you know, read too much into anything, if that makes sense. So
right, you know, let me hear everything, I'll decide how to react to it. Yeah
right. So I want to, you know, we hear really positive things about Joshua Manning, great, file that away. If there's a injury that happens in that receiving core, he's probably in a good position to step up and be one of those next guys up. But do I expect him to, you know, really eat into Luther Burden's target shares? No, I don't. You know, he was the standout on offense. The standout on defense was a walk-on transfer who got MVP honors, the younger brother of Corey Flagg, the linebacker transfer from Miami, Caleb Flagg. There we go. don't have to.
I was scrolling towards
cut it. Too much. Yeah. But apparently he's had 7 or 8 interceptions in spring practices so far this year. So he's been a playmaker, was expected to come in, maybe just play special teams, but a lot of, you know, glowing reports from the coaching staff about what he's done, you know, throughout the spring, and then, you know, showed up and on the big stage on Saturday. So good news there, but Missouri is just a really, really intriguing team for me. We got to see the new running back duo, seems like a true thunder and lightning, with Marcus Carroll, the transfer from Georgia State, and Nate Noel, the transfer from Appalachian State. They were on opposite teams. Both, I think, look good. Just, you know, there was a lot of new faces on the defensive line. Chris McClellan, 6'3", 325-pounder, likely to step in and, you know, take on one of those primary interior roles. He had 2 sacks in the game. So we had an opportunity to see some new faces and an opportunity to, you know, take a look at this team that has really, really high expectations. And you know, how do those question marks that we discussed a couple of weeks ago, like the players in the secondary they have to replace, you know, how did that work out? And the secondary stepped up, played well. The transfer from Clemson, Toriano Pride Jr., was the one who picked off Cook early in the or close to halftime, I think it was. You know, made a nice play there. So you never want to read too much into it because it's a zero-sum game, right? Good offense means bad defense. Bad defense means good offense. What's really true? It's nice to see what we can learn. If it's anything that's really gonna, you know, be super important for the fall, maybe not. But it's always nice to be able to dig in a little bit on one of those teams that really does have a lot of positive buzz heading into next season.
Don't worry about not guessing it right, Nick, because gamblers have not been guessing it right when they see the real thing for 10 straight weeks. So, you know, there's just no way to know the answer after one spring game or one, you know, even a week of practice. So, but there are interesting storylines for sure. And as we're moving forward here, there's going to be the slow trickle of teams opening spring practice in February, early March. There was a flood of activity since our last episode. Oregon, Wisconsin, Virginia Tech headlined the programs that kicked off last week. The Ducks practiced twice and will take 2 weeks off before resuming. Cal, Colorado, Tennessee, Baylor, Florida State, Kansas City, Kentucky, Louisville, Memphis, Michigan State, Mississippi State, USC, South Carolina, and Iowa are just a sampling of the teams that started on Monday or Tuesday. It felt like the opening day of fall camp, you say. So I'm over here saying like, hey, you know, there's a little less going on. You know, obviously I'm not as granular as you are, Nick, but you said it feels like fall camp opening already. So you're just getting a flood of information right now, huh?
Yeah. If anybody out there has written something titled 5 Observations from Practice 1, I've probably read it or at least skimmed it.
Right, sure.
That though, I still have about 25 tabs open, so maybe I haven't gotten
more
to
work
yet,
to do. But, sure,
but it will get some time from me soon. So yeah, those teams that are opening up or have opened up in the last couple of days, I'm catching up best I can. But yeah, definitely to me, that first day of fall camp is always just a flood of information. Every team site, every beat reporter, and I love it because I want all that information I can get. What's changed since the last time, you know, these folks were able to put their eyes on this football team in whatever form they're able to. So we get, you know, guys who are gaining weight, losing weight. We have guys who drop off the roster unexpectedly. Transfer news, guys are changing positions, flipping, you know, from safety to wide receiver, from offensive line to defensive line, from, you know, right guard to right tackle. So I want to know it all. Some of it doesn't matter. Sometimes it's definitely like, you know, finding a needle in a haystack to find that most important piece of information. But I want to try to do my best to keep up with it when I can and put that information to use, most importantly, in things like our returning production database and our team profiles.
Absolutely. So, I mean, there's been a lot of stuff already going on. So Nick, I just want to kick it off and I'll ask, you know, Xavier what teams he wants to hear about, but tell me about the Miami program here that they replacing 3 players that are going to the NFL draft. Cam Ward is coming in. You know, they had obviously quarterback issues down the stretch. So, it looks like he's going to take over and look good. What do we see from Miami so far?
Well, we talked about it a couple of weeks ago that just the early reports about Cam Ward are just through the roof, glowing. Seems like a difference maker. Seems different than the way that the beat has covered the quarterback position there at Miami for a little while. Obviously, some things changed in the running game. We talked about Henry Parrish, but the passing game seems to be in good hands with Ward. Xavier Restrepo is probably one of the best wide receivers in the country, quite honestly. Had an excellent year last year. Seems to really be building rapport with Cam Ward. Jacoby George is a solid number two option. They've got some really exciting freshmen in the mix, JoJo Trader being one of those, highly rated freshman wide receiver coming in. Looks like he's going to be getting some playing time. The offensive line is back and experienced and really, honestly, a pretty solid unit. Defensively, it's not probably going to grade out quite as well as they did on paper last year for us when Miami was number one in our preseason roster strength numbers on the defensive side of the ball. But they're getting some key players back from injury. Do have a little bit of work to do in the secondary. Probably going to enter the transfer portal or try to bring somebody in from the transfer portal to mix into that group, because there's only one full-time starter coming back, and that's Daryl Porter Jr., and they've had some injuries in that group that have perhaps maybe played into why Cam Ward and Xavier Restrepo look so good early on. But there's a lot of talent on that defense, and I think they're going to be in pretty good shape. Miami is – I know we – say it every year, but seems like they're going to be very much in the mix in the ACC this season.
Xavier, who do you want to ask about here? Because there's a big list of teams.
Yeah, for sure. We're going to stick with LSU first. Obviously, it's the third quarterback or the second quarterback. Obviously, now with Nussmeier being the guy, he's been biding his time, right? Had to sit behind Jane Daniels for 2 years. Showed some flashes in last year's in his first spring practice. Showed some flashes in last 2 years ago now, SEC championship game. So I know that there's some hype down there in Baton Rouge for the kid. Are you here? Obviously, right now would probably be the time for people to be pushing the Garrett Nussmeier dark horse Heisman candidate train to oblivion. But what are you hearing out of Baton Rouge?
Good things about Nussmeier. This time last year, we weren't 100% sure he wasn't going to beat out Jaden Daniels, right? And Jaden Daniels goes on and wins the Heisman. So LSU seems to be in a good place at the quarterback position. I'm a little more curious if it's going to be as smooth a transition because there's a new offensive play caller there. Joe Sloan is taking over as OC, and he was on staff last season, so probably not a major change, but curious to see if, first-time play caller, big job, a little bit difficult. There's a real lack of depth at running back, and then, of course, having to replace two of the best wide receivers in the country is going to be a big deal. So can Kyron Lacy step up and be that true number one? Is a guy like CJ Daniels, who early in spring practice was actually running with the number two offense, is he going to step up and be able to carry over what was a really, really productive and explosive season at Liberty last year? How is all that going to shake out? The offensive line looks good. The defense is talented, but obviously was a huge, huge question mark last year. So, Nussmeier is going to have to win a lot of games, throwing for 400 yards like he did in the bowl game. And we'll see if that wide receiver group is going to round itself out to make that a real, possibility for LSU. I think they're going to be a fun team. I think they have the potential to be a pretty volatile team at this point. But there are a lot of pieces that look like they are fitting in, decently well. Caleb Jackson, probably the best running back, but Josh Williams, maybe the most trusted running back. Mm-hmm. So not sure exactly, who's going to lead in rushing yards, who's going to lead in receptions, things like that. But seems like there's enough options there that with Garrett Nussmeier kind of being the center offensively, they're not going to see a huge drop off. They were the best offense in the country last year. So it's probably, you know, going to be a little bit of a drop off, but hopefully they won't fall off a cliff. And I don't think they will.
How about Oregon? Oregon replacing a lot on offense too. I mean, Bucky Irving, Bo Nix, Jackson Powers Johnson, Troy Franklin, all going to the NFL draft. Got some big time transfers in, you know, Dylan Gabriel, obviously at quarterback. So, I mean, what can we expect the offense to look like under Dylan Gabriel? Because, you know, Bo Nix ran it so well.
Yeah. And you know, the big sort of first thing that gets tweeted out every, you know, practice number one is who takes that first quarterback rep. And at Oregon, it actually wasn't Dylan Gabriel. So I don't expect that Austin Novosad is going to be the week one starter. I do think that Gabriel is eventually going to win this job. And I think Dante Moore is probably
Dante Moore is quarterback. In there too. Yeah,
right. Exactly. But you know, seniority, guys who've been there, sure. Things like that, people, coaching staffs determine who gets that, you know, who lines up first in drills and things like that.
And it's tough to take it away from a kid if the kid earned it. So
sure,
you know.
Sure, exactly. So things are still evolving at Oregon. Evan Stewart's not on campus yet. So, you know, you've got Tez Johnson and Gary Bryant, who are starters at wide receiver. Will Trayshawn Holden be able to step up and you know, secure a starting role? Sounds like he and Bryant are perhaps in competition there. Jurion Dickey was not a disappointment, but somebody who got off to a slower start probably than a lot expected, being such a highly rated recruit last year as a true freshman. There were some interesting quotes from offensive coordinator Will Stein after one of the first two practices where it really kind of, if you're reading between the lines, sounded like maybe he was saying Dickey didn't have a real firm grasp on, you know, his role or the playbook, things like that. Maybe that limited him. Maybe now a full season under his belt and a full off season, he's going to be able to step up and emerge as a playmaker. Sounds like Noah Whittington is back and healthy at running back. So he'll be a complement to Jordan James. And then there's a really intriguing transfer, Jay Harris, who is a Division II transfer from Northwest Missouri State, who's 6'2", 215, had just a huge year last season at Division II. So is he going to have, you know, going back to Missouri, is he going to have like a Cody Schrader type emergence? Or is he going to end up third in the pecking order behind James, who really excelled behind Bucky Irving last year, and then Whittington, who the coaching staff seems to love and raves about every time I see his name in print. So that Oregon offense, there's definitely some moving parts, but they look like they're going to be pretty high in our offensive roster strength numbers. I mean, mid-90s right now in the like early rating. So probably going to be like a top three offense in terms of just overall talent. Curious to see how the defense shakes out, because they've got perhaps even more moving parts, especially in that secondary. And I'm a little concerned, you know, they're playing a full Big Ten schedule. That's going to be completely different. How's that going to play out? So
yeah.
Oregon's a really, really intriguing team, but I think the offense is going to be in a good place. I've got probably more questions about the defense right now.
Xavier, you got another team you're looking forward to here?
Yeah, in typical Xavier fashion, I'm going to give you a two-piece. Both transfer quarterbacks, both at, you know, some would call them the blue bloods of college football. I want to know what's going on with Ohio State and Notre Dame. Two teams that I feel like will forever be attached at the hip as far as lineage is concerned. And two teams featuring transfer quarterbacks that are both extremely highly rated by both fan bases. I've already been asked about whether or not Riley Leonard's a sleeper first rounder. Yes, I've already been asked that question. And Will Howard is, you know, already been thought of as the guy to get Ohio State over the hump and get them back into the college football playoff and back to beating Michigan.
Yeah, well, first on Riley Leonard, I mean, he stepped up and immediately it seemed like had a firm grasp on the number one quarterback job. So really no questions there. The the bigger question, I think, is how is that receiving group going to work around him? Because Leonard did have the ankle injury last season, suffered actually against Notre Dame, that cut his season short after he, you know, tried to gut it out for a few more games. But seems like he's back fully healthy, running the offense, doing pretty well. But they've got some new look receivers coming in. Chris Mitchell, the transfer from FIU, had a big practice one, made some impressive plays. Jaden Harrison, transfer from Marshall, known more as a special teams performer, but seems like he's going to have an opportunity to come in and probably play the slot for the most part and perhaps be productive. Bo Collins, transfer, former starter at Clemson, not on campus yet, but imagine he'll be a factor as well. Jordan Faison is playing lacrosse, so he's not there for spring practice, but he, I think, really flashed as kind of a real pleasant surprise last season as a true freshman. So I think Riley Leonard is going to be a solid addition at quarterback for Notre Dame. You'll have to tell me, on first round future. I don't know necessarily.
The class here seems light so far, but I mean, every time they say it feels light, mm-hmm. there's usually a good one outside of the Pickett Malik Willis year. You know what I mean? So almost every year we're going to get a couple. So I think Quinn is leading right now, but I think Riley Leonard is in there. So we'll see when we get there. But go ahead. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, that's good. And there was some buzz for him this time last year, right? After he really kind of came out on the scene at Duke. So I think that Notre Dame's in pretty good shape. I think that they are, I mean, right now, their defense is number two in our preseason roster strength behind only Ohio State, who's just off the charts. But so this is an interesting two that you chose here. So I think that for Notre Dame to have a really, really solid season, Riley Leonard,
to really me, it's just stay healthy. I think he's proven.
Yeah, this. Yeah. Stay
healthy. On the field and show the wheels again, because he does like to run a little bit, or he has the ability to. So I think for sure it's just that guy just needs to stay healthy. So
yeah. Curious how the running game works itself out. Having to replace both starters at tackle, having to replace Audric Estime, of course, who is a big bruiser. They don't really have that guy right now on the roster, a true freshman. Kadren Young is 220, but everybody else is right around 200. So that's a little bit of a question. Health at the tight end position is a little bit of a question, but I think Notre Dame is going to be a really, really interesting team. Ohio State is kind of one of those where when camp opens, the hotshot incoming transfer didn't get that first rep. So what does it really mean? Can we really trust it? We talked about the Ohio State Michigan coaching move. And there's been plenty of speculation because who knows what the quarterback situation in Michigan is going to be like. And they just started spring practice and sounded like Jack Tuttle got the first snap. But if Will Howard doesn't beat out Devin Brown clearly by time summer rolls around, will maybe he look to move on, and could Michigan be a fit? Or reverse that, if Will Howard does quickly emerge and Devin Brown loses out on the competition again, would he jump into the portal? And if he does, would Michigan be a fit? That would be wild. But there's already plenty of speculation that something like that could happen. I anticipate Howard will win the job. Devin Brown, I've always kind of liked. I know some of the recruiting folks at Campus to Canton have loved Devin Brown, and it's been a shame that he hasn't been able to capitalize on opportunities. He was hurt last year, missed the spring game. He got hurt in his start in the the Sugar Bowl against Missouri, really limited his momentum that he potentially could have had going into this offseason, maybe locked down that job, kind of like Miller Moss seemingly has done at USC based off his bowl game performance. Ohio State, I think it's a little less clear that, Notre Dame, Riley Leonard, he's going to be the starter. Will Howard, probably going to be the starter, but it's a lot closer to, maybe like 70-30. Could potentially inch, a little bit closer. I haven't seen any major updates the last, couple of weeks. Ohio State did a great job of giving everybody, super access the first few practices. And then maybe I'm just swamped with other information, but it seems like perhaps they scale it back a little bit now that they're sort of in the full swing of it.
How about South Carolina? I know that Robbie Ashford transferred in. Is that the plan at quarterback to replace Rattler? Is Ashford? I know Doty's still on the roster, but isn't he like thinking about switching positions or something? Like what is happening at South Carolina, I would say, because it seems like they have a lot of transfers, but there's also some big talent to replace in Rattler and Leggett.
Yeah, the another C2C favorite, Lenore Sellers, has the inside track right now.
Okay.
Is they just started Tuesday, I think. So Sellers was first in the quarterback drills, and everything I've read, including some updates yesterday from Gamecock Central, Chris Clark of Gamecock Central, wrote in a spring practice preview a couple of days ago that this will be a legitimate competition, albeit one we anticipate Sellers winning at some point. Andrew Leone of Gamecock Digest reported that Sellers was the first quarterback in every drill, and the one quick offensive team snaps that they had when reporters were able to view it, Robbie Ashford was the backup with Davis Bevel and Dante Reno following. It sounds like Luke Doty, I believe, is listed as an athlete on the roster. So not even
is that right?
Okay. Quarterback anymore. Sounds like he's been repping at wide receiver mostly, but also, saw some quotes from Shane Beamer that he's also, improved as a quarterback as well. So seems like he's going to have a bit of a slash role, but probably playing more of a wide receiver. But as of right now, the redshirt freshman Lenore Sellers, he's the guy to beat. He's going to be a lot of fun if he wins that job, I think.
Any other teams you have interest in here, Xavier?
I would troll Nick and ask him about Iowa, but I'm not going to do that.
What about this, Nick? What other what are the information from that you've seen so far do you think is very important that we haven't hit?
Well, at Alabama, there was a question, will the coaching staff make it a actual quarterback competition? Does Jalen Milroe have something to worry about? Sounds like no. Sounds like all reports are he's taken every first team rep so far. Sounds like maybe he's going to get his left tackle back too, so that could be positive. I don't think anybody who transfers is going to have to wait till summer, but that's at least perhaps good news, more good news for Alabama if Proctor ends up there. But Milroe seems to be in good shape. Very curious to see how the wide receiver group works itself out there. A lot of moving pieces. Let's see, who else? Ole Miss, Jackson Dart's been limited this spring. Not sure that that's going to be a major factor, but Ole Miss's expectations preseason are pretty much off the charts. So hopefully he's back and fully healthy. At Georgia, they've got a sort of a long list of injuries, but nobody, it sounds like, is expected to miss the season other than, unfortunately, there was a medical retirement. We might have mentioned it in the last show. I know we mentioned it in Good Morning College Football, but Pierce Berlin is medically retired, so that's very unfortunate for him. But it sounds like even though, some guys like, I know Colby Young the transfer from Miami. He's been limited with a lower body injury early on, but doesn't sound like it's going to be anything that's going to impact his ability to really even participate this spring. But there are a couple other linemen and linebackers and defensive backs who are going to be sitting out, but that's just going to give opportunities for younger guys. And it sounds like Trevor Etienne, coming in and going to be an immediate, if not starter, major, factor in that running back room. The wide receiver transfers sound like, in addition to Young, Landon Humphreys is coming in and have a lot of expectations. Benjamin Urosek, talked about the tight end position, having to replace Brock Bowers. He'll be arriving in the summer after graduating from Stanford. Things seem to be looking really, really good there. Penn State started up. There's a lot of excitement about that offense. I'm a little curious to see how the offensive line comes together because it doesn't look great on paper. At Colorado, something that caught my eye, we know they've got a lot of really interesting wide receivers and a lot of talent in that wide receiver room. But it sounds like Amarion Miller, who is a true freshman last year, had one huge game, but then otherwise really didn't do too much. Sounds like he's really taken a big step. So something to keep an eye on there. USC just opened up. Lincoln Riley, it sounds like, is spending his time far more with the defense, which, maybe they finally fixed it, Xavier. Maybe this Lincoln Riley coach team is finally going to have a good defense now that he's spending a little more time on that side of the ball. I don't know. But, there's plenty going on. And is anything super earth-shattering at this moment?
It's all interesting.
Probably not, but there's – I don't know. You could ask me about ULM. I watched a local news, 3 minute. They were there at practice talking with new head coach Bryant Vincent. So I could probably pull something out about everybody, but will it be earth shattering? Probably not.
Yeah. Nick Pay is a guy that looks exactly like Bobby Boucher to film the practices at ULM. So he has the inside scoop there. But hey, look. It's all interesting, right? That's why you keep hammering it, and this is why Nick has the best database that I have ever seen. To be honest with you, it's unbelievable. It's in depth. Everything is taken into consideration. But look, it's at the end of the show, and we've been doing this slow Heisman draft, and unfortunately for Xavier and I, Nick, it's your turn to pick first. I hope you don't take my guy. This is who I almost took him last week. So please don't take my guy here because I'm always in the middle. Xavier, you're last this week. But who's it going to be? And right now you have Jackson Dart, Dylan Gabriel. I have Ewers and Will Howard. And Xavier has Beck and Rising. So
maybe it's recency bias. But I'm gonna say, I really liked what Kalen DeBoer said that Jalen Milroe is taking every snap. That Alabama team is seemingly adding more and more talent around him. So I'm gonna take Jalen Milroe with my next pick.
That's okay. Look, Jalen definitely is probably better than my pick. He's a great selection, right? Because all he really has to do is look a little impressive and Alabama goes undefeated, which can happen almost any year, even the year that Nick Saban leaves. I think it's in the cards. So Milroe is a great pick. But we talked about my guy that I've wanted since last week for a big chunk of this show. I wanted Riley Leonard really bad. And we talked about him a lot. So I was kind of like, shut up. Quit talking about it. But yeah, I mean, I believe he's plus 2,800 last week. He is plus 2,800 right now. And Milroe is fourth best in the odds. And he was the best guy on the board left that we haven't taken at plus 1,400. But yeah, it's still Ewers and Beck at plus 9, Dylan Gabriel plus 1,000, and Jalen Milroe at plus 1,400. And then Riley Leonard, who I just took, is plus 2,800. So that puts it on you, Xavier. What's it going to be for your third selection?
I'm going to test you guys' internet meme knowledge with this next one. All I'm going to do is this.
I know this one.
Okay.
Let the record show. Xavier made a fist and showed his very expensive watch on his website.
Shedeur Sanders, bring him on down. I'm buying into the Buffs this year. It's the Big 12, a reconstructed Big 12. I feel more confident than I did about them last year. The Pac-12 was an absolute gauntlet. I feel like they have an easier schedule. Shedeur put up ridiculous numbers even with the loss, even with the win-loss record that they had last season. I'm buying in. I think he goes crazy. I think we see a real chance where Travis Hunter may find his way into the Biletnikoff conversation if he stays healthy. I'm buying in with the man with the rollie on his wrists. Let's go to work, Shedeur.
There you go.
Yeah, that's that is the longest odds of anyone that's been selected. He's at plus 4,500, but not a bad selection. I mean, Colorado wins a couple more games this season, you know, a lot more games this season, and he looks good doing it. He looked good last year anyway. So, you know, it's definitely in the cards. This is we'll have half as many selections as Phil Steele has at the back end of his magazine by the time we're done with this. So we're going to stack it up. We're going to have a bunch of selections here, but that will wrap it up for us today. Look at us doing a show barely over an hour. This is unheard of from CFB Winning Edge. But if you want more, which you obviously will because we've made you addicted to two-hour podcasts, you can follow us on the Twitter at Campus2Canton for the show, at CFB Winning Edge for Nick, at Xavier underscore Trish-T-R-I-C-H-E for Xavier, and at Bogman Sports for myself. And we will see you guys next week. Take it easy, everybody.